Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome to the Roy Green Show podcast.
The private member's bill that's been talked about a great deal over the last couple of days, and it's the private member's bill from NDP Member of Parliament Charlie Angus, Bill 372, which Mr. Angus, and I've read it, Mr. Angus compares it to legislation of the 1990s to punish the tobacco industry for its then willful and incorrect advertising. So I don't remember a whole lot of willful, incorrect advertising by the tobacco industry in the 1990s, certainly earlier than that, but the 1990s, they were backing off. But hey, we don't want to just nitpick here, Charlie. His bill would result in difficulties for positive advertising and messaging by oil and natural gas producers and their supporters. At its worst, if they were to misrepresent their product, terrible oil, terrible natural gas. What the hell was the city bus doing? I just looked out the window. There's a city bus drove by, said, powered by natural gas. Get it off the road, or Charlie's coming for you. You can't outthink those who aren't thinking. I did get in touch, or try to get in touch, with Charlie Angus, who's been on this program on a number of occasions. Sent him an email. What was that old Beatles song, No Reply? Happened once before, I came to your door, no reply. Anyway, I sent Mr. Angus an email. He didn't reply. Charlie only replies when he... Charlie, finish that. Give me a call now, Charlie, right now. 1-800-263-2428. Right now, Charlie, 1-800-263-2428. And I'll have you talk to my guest who's here. Be happy to talk to you. Chris Sankey is our guest. Chris is a former elected counselor at the Laxquilams First Nation. He's a businessman, op-ed writer, senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute. And I think Chris, you could probably give Charlie a run for his money on this, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Good to have you with us, Chris. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. That was a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Let me start, before we talk about Mr. Angus's legislation, let me just go to what Joe Biden has done, and that is to suspend licenses for the export for liquid natural gas. That, if we had the infrastructure to export, it would be a massive green light for this country and bring huge amounts of money into Canada. There will be those who will argue, well, look, First Nations don't want it. What do you say to that, Chris?
That's not true. Look, at the end of the day, Indigenous people are part of the solution to the economic engine, and natural gas is needed everywhere. It's not just here in Canada, but everywhere around the world. We have an abundance of it. It would mean billions into the GDP, back to the country, thousands of jobs, and we'd be an independent energy giant. Angus's bill is just probably the most ridiculous private member's bill I have ever read. It's atrocious. I mean, it completely violates human rights to say and have freedom of expression. And I don't know where he thinks he's right. Everybody, no matter what, if it's oil and gas, has a right to advertise. And the companies that I work with, all of them, are publicly traded companies. Do you think they're going to put something out there that is misleading or disinformation? They're not going to do that. Charlie's trying to target organizations like the Canadian Gas Association, which I'm a part of the National Organizing Committee. They're already trying to attack colleagues of mine. And there's a number of others, organizations, Indigenous and non, that are advertising responsible resource development. So what does that mean? That means that we're going to be responsible in developing our resources. We're going to have Indigenous input into the environmental assessment process, which we have. Clearly, the ISLA have demonstrated that with LNGC and now CEDAR. And so it's just absolute lunacy that this individual has the audacity to threaten people by throwing them in jail. Like, where does he think he thinks he is? If you want to behave that way, move to Russia, move somewhere else, get out of the country. You don't talk to Canadians like that, threaten them for the right to have the freedom of expression to promote a resource that's going to not only help Canada, but it's going to help bring thousands of Indigenous people who desperately need sole source revenues out of poverty. I mean, he's the member for Timmins, James Bay, and they've got a massive population over there of Indigenous people. And he claims to think that these doctors with the Canadian Association of Physicians, who are constantly attacking the energy industry, they should be more focused on the drug overdose that's going on over, the violent crimes that are taking place, the hospitals that are being overrun. Instead, that whole organization has been so fixated in attacking an industry that's keeping people alive and the lights on. And they keep attacking Canada's natural resources. If you're so worried about emissions around the world, go to the Middle East. Go to Venezuela, go to Mexico, go to these places that have zero human rights, go to these places that have no environmental standards. It's just absolute lunacy, and he's not smart enough to think of this bill on his own. There's obviously lobbying groups that are going to him and pushing this bill, and they're trying to shut down any sort of language that pertains to a positive message for Canada. And our Indigenous people, what's he going to do? He's going to throw all of the Indigenous communities that are looking to buy TMX in jail for promoting their oil project? I mean, does Charlie drive from Timmins to Ottawa? I mean, how many air miles does that guy have? What it takes oil and gas to get there? I don't know what he thinks he's doing, but it's got to be the stupidest bill I've ever read in my life. In fact, it's infuriating. And the fact that Parliament would even entertain that, it's a gross misuse of power. And quite frankly, if it was up to me, he should just step down. You don't threaten people's lives like that, trying to turn them upside down and throw them in jail for advertising something positive. Nobody's advertising anything negative or disinformation or misinformation. This guy is out of his mind, man.
It sounds to me like you're throwing down the gauntlet to Charlie Angus, and I'd be more than happy to have him debate you on Absolutely. This program. I know you 100%. Wouldn't. I know you'd say yes.
100% I would, and so are the thousands of Indigenous communities that rely on natural gas and oil. I mean, it's in our backyard. It's no different than fishing and forestry. Well, how do we get out there? We need oil and gas. I mean... It's just lunacy what he's doing, and the fact that he's trying to accuse the energy industry for falsifying ads, that's absolute nonsense. That's not true. Like I said, these companies are heavily regulated. They can't be putting out misinformation or disinformation, and I'm tired of these environmental groups lobbying Ottawa to shut down an industry that's keeping the lights on in this country, and we're losing billions because of the absolute lunacy and nonsense that comes out of Ottawa with the likes of Charlie Angus. He's literally helping kill this economy, the country. I mean, who's going to want to come here? You can't even advertise a natural resource that we use virtually every day of our lives. If he's so hell-bent on stopping everything and not advertising, well, you should just walk around the world naked, because everything we require requires hydrocarbons to live.
Yeah,
our
it does.
Clothing, our food, everything, yeah. Transportation, infrastructure, everything is required oil and gas. So you tell me what the alternative is.
I was speaking, Chris, with a former chief of a Northern Ontario community, First Nations community, just day before yesterday. He's coming on the show next Saturday. And just talking about the challenges of life in that community that exist year after year after year. And, you know, the politicians, the federal parties, all of them, but particularly, you know, we have to look at Mr. Trudeau now, because he's been in power for 9 years. They talk a good game at election time, and then you don't see them anymore. Or then later during their tenure, they talk to their constituents they want to reach with a particular message, and they forget the constituencies that don't have tremendous punching back power. They're useful at election time, but then later on they're not that useful anymore, so they forget about them. And in many cases, this is First Nations communities. I don't think you disagree with me on that.
No, not at all. Look, we are the solution to the economic engine. Oil and gas aren't going anywhere. And we're going to continue to advertise this resource that's keeping people alive, medical supplies. We're going to continue to advertise this.
Yeah.
Nobody's providing any sort of misinformation or disinformation.
Chris, I just want to read you, make sure I don't lose you here. I want to read you a couple of emails that have come in the last 3 minutes about you. From Anthony to Roy at RoyGreenshow.com. He's a brilliant orator. That's you. We could pay off our national debt with Canada's oil and gas exports alone. Jeanette writes, Roy, I love your guest, Chris. It's so good to hear someone who's so emphatic about how Trudeau and team are destroying our economy and society. Thanks for the great show. And I get a text message from 403 area code. Roy Charlie Angus is about as dumb as Gibo. Your guest has hit the nail right on the head. It is lunacy. So, there is, though, Chris, there's this unrelenting, and you mentioned it, there's this unrelenting pressure on oil and gas, on natural resources, on the industries in this country. We should be happy that we have what the world needs. We should be exporting it. How many times do we have to say this? We should be selling it as quickly and as plentifully as we can and refill our depleted treasury. But there's so much pushback.
There is, you know, millions of dollars have come into this country to block Canada's oil and gas sector. And granted, you know, industry wasn't always as clean as it used to be 20 years ago. I mean, as clean as it is now, 20 years ago. But the fact that Canada continues to get attacked by these interest groups that are fully funded by a number of foreign entities to block Canada's responsible resource development, they're continuing to attack to Alberta oil sands. You want to talk about slander? You want to talk about saying misinformation? They call the oil sands tar sands. That's incorrect. You have a bunch of physicians out there attacking the gas industry, putting up ads that are incorrect. What about them? Are you going to throw them in jail? It's absolute nonsense, and we are losing billions. People can't afford their homes.
Yeah.
The average person is so far in debt.
I have to stop you there, but I hope you'll come back really soon, Chris.
Absolutely. That was a pleasure, Roy, yeah. And I look forward to further discussion.
Thank you.
They're important.
So this morning, I called the former Premier of British Columbia and former federal health minister, Liberal federal health minister, Premier Ujjal Dosanjh, and I asked the Premier if he would come on the air with us and speak about the issues in this country. There is the possibility, it's not likely, we're told, I'm not so sure about that. There is the possibility that we'll have a federal election toward the end of 2024. And what will the issues be? Will the issues be phony issues the political parties raise during election campaigns that are dutifully regurgitated by some media, even though the story has nothing to do, which is front and center in the country? They just find a topic, the parties do, that they think is convenient to them, and then they toss out a news release to media, and media just dutifully report it as news. It's not. It's spin. You should never report spin as news, because it isn't. And all the parties do it. In this country, because we're center-left, the center-left party's spin is reported more regularly than is the center and center-right political reality. But what are the issues, and what matters to Canadians, and how do political parties approach an election? We're going to have one either this year or early next year. We have the former Premier of British Columbia, former Health Minister for Canada, Ujjal Dosanjh, with us. One of my favorite guests, as you know. Mr. Premier, I've said to you before, the only threat that I can direct your way is if you ever decide to run again, I'll fly to BC and campaign on your behalf.
Impossible.
What, that I'd fly to BC?
No, impossible that I'd run.
Well, you should.
No, you should fly to BC anyway. It's a nice place.
It is a nice place. You should run.
It's a different time. I look at the debates and I find that the actors are a lot angrier than politicians used to be in the past. They're more polarizing and they're more accusatory rather than debating the issues. So I find all of that rather nauseating.
Do you find, as you observe, and you had an extensive and active political life, successful, do you find when you watch and you listen that the political leaders and their deputies represent the interests of the party and not so much the interests of the people in the country?
There is very little thoughtful debate, and only thoughtful debate can go to the issues of the country. And I'm finding that more and more people are accusing each other of things that perhaps others haven't done or they don't stand for. And it's a bit of a phony debate. I know people are angry, and people are angry because they're suffering. Rather than talking about those issues in real time and in real terms, I find that, the current government wants to paint the opposition as mega, and the opposition is doing its job of criticizing the government as best as it could. Even Mr. Trudeau admitted that somehow Mr. Poilievre have found sort of the nerve of people's concerns and has been able to tap into it. So if he genuinely believes that, then I think that he should engage in real debates rather than accusing each other of being either MAGA or something else.
So you brought up Mr. Trudeau. He's crashing in the polls. His record is being questioned. His actions, like invoking the Emergencies Act, only to be rebuked by a federal court. And the Deputy Prime Minister immediately challenging the court decision, saying, I'm paraphrasing, we value the opinion of the court and the independence of the court, but however, we disagree with the court. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree. It went to the court. The court had made its decision. Now go to the Supreme Court of Canada and stop, stop with the accusations deftly directed toward the court.
Oh, absolutely.
That's me. That's me, the talk show host, talking. But then, Premier, we have the carbon tax. And it's being manipulated, I really believe, by Mr. Trudeau. And I'm not a big fan of his, which everybody who listens to this program knows. He's never come on this program. And I truly believe if he ever did and we gave him 3 hours, we'd never get past the first question. But what is, let me ask you for your assessment. You were a liberal cabinet minister in a different time, in a different government, with a different set of political values or approach. What is your sense of the job of Mr. Trudeau's done? Then I'll ask you about Mr. Poilievre.
Well, I find that Mr. Trudeau talks in talks in language that's dated, that doesn't relate to the concerns of the people, and he's sort of mired in the past of identity politics and things of that nature, and he's never been able to get out of it. And I of course served with him as an MP for 2 or 3 years when he was when we were in opposition, and I find that he can do better, but he is regurgitating the same old. Even on one of the files that concerns me, that what we're doing in terms of our immigration is we're bringing the problems of the world into Canada, and we have battles on the streets in Canada, marches and countermarches, and sometimes violent, because the politicians, Mr. Trudeau in particular, hasn't been able to say to people, when you come to Canada, change. We expect you to integrate. And that's really a problem. So I'm finding that that he's not grappling with the issues, whether it's the economy, whether it's immigration, whether it's housing. There is more verbiage coming out than real solutions.
Mm-hmm. No, I fundamentally agree with everything you just said about the man. And I know after 10 years, it's difficult, no matter who you are, it's difficult to maintain your popularity among the electorate. Doesn't matter who you are or where you're running for office. We'll go talk federal now, because I do think there's a good chance of us having a federal election before the end of this year. Certainly do have to have one within 16 months, right? Yeah, 16 months. Premier, you said that the political parties and the leaders, I think you're, if I can interpret what you said, are prone to drama, theatrics. But we also have a polarized population, and a polarized population because people, as you said, are hurting. We know people are hurting. So it's advantageous for a political party to step into the void and say, we will do away with the pain, i.e. we'll ban the carbon tax. So what is your sense then of the performance by Mr. Poilievre and the Conservative Party?
I think Pierre Poilievre has tapped into the angst people are feeling all over the country. The cost of living, whether it's housing or food or anything else, it's all gone up, and many people are having difficulty making both ends meet. And he's tapped into it. And I've been watching. I watch the news, I read the news, but I didn't know Pierre Poilievre, but I've known of him because he was in the House. When I was in government, he'd just been elected as well when I was elected in 2004. He has grown, but there's still, he comes across as an angry man. Part of it is being in opposition. You have to criticize. But he needs to come across as a little less angry. He's obviously tapped into people's anger, as you mentioned on your program, that there are vast swaths of people that are prepared to vote for somebody like Trump in this country. And that's a problem. It's a problem for America. It could be a problem for us too. Therefore, we've always in Canada, we found the middle ground. I can confess to you that when Stephen Harper became the prime minister, I worried that he'll go farther to the right, but he found a sweet spot. And, Canada wasn't that badly off when he was the prime minister. So I've become somewhat of a nonpartisan in my later life. And I think Pierre Poilievre has found the groove, but he needs to be less angry, and Mr. Trudeau needs to be more constructive, needs to have more plans than just the kind of verbiage that he's been using in the past. It's not going to work. If he's going into the next election to lead the Liberals and possibly beat Pierre Poilievre, then he has to find a new act.
Yeah, I'm just going to give you my thought on Mr. Trudeau. It's over. It's over. The problem for the Liberals is they don't have anybody else. There's nobody behind Trudeau to take his place. And I don't think the former governor of the Bank of Canada is the answer. And I've forgotten his last name. I mean, I talk about him all the time.
Carney.
Yeah, Mark Carney. I don't think he's the answer. But let me ask you this question. We have about a minute and a half. Is there a more foolish federal leader than Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the New Democrats, who continues to keep that deal in place with a descending Trudeau? Doesn't Mr. Singh, or maybe I'm wrong about this, wouldn't you say that Mr. Singh, we have 30 seconds, is foolish to stay in that deal?
Well, I agree with you. I think that he's going to be sort of meat in the sandwich. He's going to be squeezed in the next election, and he really has little credibility when he keeps the Liberals in power while continuing to criticize them. If you're in bed with somebody, it's really unseemly to be critical of them. So either have a divorce. Or get on with it.
Get on with what? Sorry. I couldn't resist that. Do you believe, Premier, I shouldn't say some things that I say. It's the medication. Do you believe that there will be a federal election in 2024?
I don't believe so. I don't believe Mr. Trudeau is ready. He knows that he will lose the election if it goes in the next 3 or 4 months. Either they need a leadership campaign or Mr. Trudeau needs a new act. And it seems to me that it's going to be rather difficult to find that new act.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The federal NDP is engaged in attempting to push legislation through Parliament to ban using force against children by adults in a supervisory position, including in schools across Canada, as well as parental spanking in the home. And that's going to second reading in Parliament. We talked about this on the air 30-plus years ago. It was a huge issue, extremely emotional responses, and it was particularly about a parent's right to spank. In 2004, the Supreme Court of Canada upheld what is known as Section 43 of the Criminal Code, permitting corporal punishment under specific circumstances. Spanking must be used only for corrective purposes. The court ruled the child must be older than 2 years of age, not a teenager, when being spanked by a parent, and be able to understand why the punishment is being applied and that the spanking may not degrade the child. Also, the adult is not allowed to spank or otherwise corporally punish a child when the adult is in a state of anger. By the way, 1892 was when Section 43 was placed into the Canadian Criminal Code, 1892. Teachers are not in favor. The Canadian Teachers Federation does not like this bill by the NDP. Where else can we go with this? Oh, yeah, there's been concerns expressed. And this was, well, I've heard in the last couple of days, but I also heard it 30 years ago. That parents who spank their children should Section 43 be removed might face criminal charges, not only if they spank their child, but also if they buckle their child in a child car seat if the child objects. There were all sorts of potential problems that were brought into the discussion. Even if Section 43 is removed, adults would still be permitted to use force against children in an emergency situation, goes this Bill 273. And then we can dig into the weeds and try to define what an emergency situation is. We call Justin Trudeau in for that one. Ari Goldkind is a Toronto criminal lawyer, media commentator. I always like to go to Ari for his thoughts and opinions on issues that are really fundamental to the way we think and get us all engaged. How are you, Ari?
I'm great, and that was a good Justin Trudeau joke, by the way. I liked it.
It just came to me, you know. It just came to me.
Well, it was a good one, but, you know, you've taken away some of the need for me today because you've explained the history of this, the law of it going to the Supreme Court in 2004 quite well. This is essentially another aspect of the no-discipline party, basically trying to fix a problem that doesn't exist. And for just your listeners to understand the history of this, there is no problem in Canada that requires this legislation. This all came from, and again, we live in a country that is absolutely choking on wokeness, an incident that happened at an Aboriginal or Indigenous school in the Yukon many, many years ago. And now as a result of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which I won't get into, now the NDP tries to pick this up to say, Houston, we have a problem. The only problem that we'll have, Roy, and you know, my view on this is very simple. If this bill being repealed is great for me, which it would be, I'll explain that in a moment, it's bad for Canada and Canadians. And what I mean by that, and a lot of your listeners, Roy, we always think wrongly that people are in nuclear families today. A mother, a father, 2.2 children. That's not the case. Why does that matter? Because right now we live in a society where there is very little discipline. We have teachers, which I think has to be a part of this segment, Roy, leaving the profession in droves. And what they'll tell you is that there's a reason that they're leaving the profession in droves. It's not because of the pay. It's because of the violence, rowdiness, and unruliness that teachers face, particularly in Toronto, where I practice most of the time, and they face significant violence. So that's the classroom part, that if a teacher touches a kid, restrains them, holds them, stops them even from hitting themselves or hitting a fellow student, they're now going to be exposed to criminal charges, which, as I said, is great for me and therefore bad for Canadians. The second part, Roy, which I think is just as important, is people will say, listening to me, well, look, if a parent spanks their kid in the privacy of their own home, even if this bill is repealed, there's no way the cops are going to charge them. They're not going to end up needing Ari Goldkind. Wrong. I can tell you, Roy, right now that almost every criminal defense lawyer in Canada has numbers, dozens of cases where parents going through a custody dispute will hurl all sorts of either true or false accusations at the other parent as an attempt to get leverage in a family court proceeding. So if anybody doesn't think this will lead to people being charged criminally that should never be charged criminally, well, I can assure you that I know how the sausage is made, and this bill is completely problematic. And again, Roy, as somebody who doesn't think children should be hit, I am convinced that anything beyond a spank or maybe just a restraint probably screws a kid's mind up, my full disclosure bias at hand. This is a bill, Roy, that does absolutely nothing significant. And in fact, I think will give license to children and teenagers to be even worse than they already are.
It's the Children's Bill of Rights. That's how it's titled, this particular piece of legislation. Ari, I remember, again, going back to the very beginnings of my discussions about this issue on the air. So that would be 30, 35 years ago. We had a call from a teacher, grade 5 teacher. I will never forget this call. And she said, we just moved. My family and I just moved. We were too close to the school where I teach, elementary school, grade 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too close to the school where I teach 35 years ago. We moved so far away that the students in my class cannot reach us even on their bicycles, because we're afraid of them 35 years ago.
So let me comment on that, Roy, because I am very lucky enough to be friends and good friends with many teachers. As a function of my age and my place in life, I just happen to be friends with a lot of teachers. And I can tell you, they have muzzled themselves. They have silenced themselves. As Canada changes, as Toronto changes demographically and in every other way, very few parents and particularly fathers left in the home. If you're a person who likes Bill Maher, this was a huge part of his show on Friday night, talking about certain people committing certain crimes, and you can link it all back to fatherlessness or a no father in the home. That's factually true, whether people think it's third rail or not. These teachers, Roy, have faced very significant violence in certain Toronto schools. Their principals do not back them, because if they do, they're worried about being called a certain word, because the kids that are committing the violence are, let's just say, not Amish or Mennonite. And it is a very, very, very significant problem. And again, this affects all children. And just to your listeners, to go back to my bias, Roy, because my bias is no child should be attacked, assaulted, threatened. This is a problem, this is a bill that doesn't fix anything, because in 2004, and you mentioned this in our intro, so kudos to you for doing it, the Supreme Court laid out, for everybody listening who agrees with me or probably you, Roy, that says, look, no child should be roughed up, no child should be manhandled in any way that more than calms them down or keeps them from hurting themselves or others, the Supreme Court literally, in six very easy-to-read lines, said, this is a crime if you do X, Y, A, B, C, D, E, F, which is what they were saying is, this is basically only a spank in the home to correct behavior, or a teacher in a school who has a kid going absolutely bananas and just restrains them or uses very mild corporate punishment. This is, again, something that's very symptomatic of a society that seems to want to reward terrible behavior and assume that by singing Kumbaya, you impose discipline on particularly young boys who are so tripped up with testosterone that when there's nobody to say no to them or correct that behavior, what do we think that kind of lack of correction is going to lead to? It's going to lead to all the other segments you and I, Roy, do every other week about carjacking, home invasion, violent crime, stabbings, and shootings. There is a through line there, and there is a connection.
Yeah. And remember, again, the bill is called the Children's Bill of Rights. So it's inevitable. It's inevitable that the parent's going to be dragged in and the parent's going to be turned into the villain in any kind of legislation like this is brought forward by the New Democrats.
That's right.
Let's go to your calls for parents and for teachers on this NDP Bill 273. No spanking. That's what they're saying. What do you say? Should parents be continued to allow to spank? And if you're a teacher who's run into a difficult situation or a threatening situation in the classroom or anywhere involving your students, we'd like to hear from you on 1-800-263-2428. Susan in Burnaby, British Columbia. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hello. What a hornet's nest. So, Roy,
it is. It absolutely is.
Parents have failed society. Hard stop. I mean, teachers, like, that is crazy. And how kids are disrespectful. I have a 30-year-old and a 34-year-old, and I spent a lot of loving time with them. But my son, he was a little bit of a monkey. And if he didn't listen, I gave him a few chances. After that, you bet I spanked him. He didn't leave a welt. It was just enough to say, hey, this is serious. You know, you don't want to be spanked. You do as you're told.
So was it the equivalent of a open hand on a closed bottom?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and he was in school the time that they were talking about good touch, bad touch. And I agree with that as far as abuse, like sexual abuse.
Of course.
But he told me one day, he said, Mom, I'm going to tell the teachers that you spanked me. And I said, well, you better think
about it. Yeah, but you know.
You could end up in a home that you don't even know the people.
Exactly, Susan. Ridiculous. If this piece of legislation does pass and a child goes to school and says, my parents spanked me, you know who would be at your door?
Yeah.
The police.
That's ridiculous, right?
The police.
Yeah.
And you could face criminal charges. Thank you for the call. Section 43. And we talked about this a couple of years ago as well. If you were to take your child, your small child, and push your child who may be fighting, you know, being a little kid, doesn't want to get in the car seat and is fighting back, and you force your little kid into the car seat, that could lead to a visit from the police and charges laid against you. Should a parent have the right to spank? My mother used to spank me open hand, backside. I was a bit of a challenge as a kid. My dad had a way of talking to me that I always wanted to do exactly what he said, even if I didn't agree with it, because he had a different way of approaching things. My mother would tell me to do something, then she'd tell me again, then she'd tell me about 44 more times, and then she'd resort to the open hand on the backside. Where are we going here?
Robert.
Robert in Hamilton. How are you, Robert?
Very good. We saw a TV show as a family a while back, a long time ago when the kids were young. And it was about elephants. And what it was a bunch of renegade teenage elephants. And they were killing the rhinoceroses, ganging up with them and killing them. And what the solution was for this television show was they brought in a full bull. This was an elephant that would have been 40 years old. And it was huge. It was much bigger and everything like that. And he straightened out all the kids. And I told the kids at the time, I go, the bull elephant, that's me. Okay? You guys have got to listen.
What did the kids say to that?
The kids, they're laughing. You're an elephant. I go, no, you guys got to think. It says, I do this because I know more than you right now in your lifetime. And I said, I love you more than any other thing, any other person. Nobody's gonna be on your side other than me when things are bad. Remember that. And the bottom line is, I said, if I'm going to punish you, I'm going to punish you. And I don't have to give an excuse for it. I don't whack you or beat you. None of that happened in our family. But the bottom line is that kids, one, have to obey their parents. And we don't have enough fathers in the world that's taking care of the kids. And that's one of the main problems.
Robert, let me guess you have a great relationship with your kids.
I got no
today.
Problem. I got no problem.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.